Is the perception in L.A. that everybody here in South Florida is like Tony Montana? I mean, is that still the perception that people have of what goes on here, or that everybody's over the age of 100 and, you know, would have trouble remembering their name?
I think it's more the latter.
Well, you're touching a nerve there, Arsenio.
No, I'm just joking. But the whole Tony Montana thing, you don't think everybody's Tony Montana because that's the area they won't let OJ come live in. I mean, how bad is OJ that you can have drug kingpins living around you, but we don't want OJ to have him? Can't have him. The other thing that dawns on you when you first arrive there is how much finer the women are than other places.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing how Miami is just great. I saw a homeless woman that I hit on in Miami. Women in Miami. I asked her, let me push your cart, baby. Come here. She was so cute. And she was homeless. And you don't find no fine homeless woman in Alabama. You know.
I'm with you. Probably won't find any women there anymore.
There is nothing better than Defo. We now return to the Defo Show.
All right, welcome back to the show. Where'd you dig this up, Luby? Mr.
Carl
DJ,
Thomas.
Doc Reno.
Summer Rain.
What's that now?
Carl Thomas, Summer Rain.
All right. These are interpretations of using the word rain in a title that I was not familiar with, but nonetheless, it's appropriate, huh? You say it's a monsoon down there in your digs in Miramar at
yes,
the iHeartRadio, the Palatial Studios that we haven't been in, at least I haven't for a while. How's the place holding up?
Still here. There's like eight of us.
Okay. All right, very
good. Grace comes in. There's like 8 to 10 people that come in every day, and the building is here. It's still comfy, cozy, but it's been dark the last 3 days in a row.
I keep thinking of that scene in the movie Alive where they're stuck in the Andes Mountains there after the plane crash, and they have to make the determination, and you're trying to dodge this decision here. It's not quite like the Tua for Fitzpatrick decision, but where they say, hey, to survive, we're going to have to eat the flesh of those who have perished. Tough decision, right? But you're in there. I mean, you got to make some tough calls. But it's great. And I think there's going to be a return soon. At least we were hoping to normalcy, although not looking good on the COVID-19 stuff. If you saw Nick Saban on the sidelines there, was he not bandaged up more than the English patient? I don't know if you remember this scene from The Usual Suspects, Luby, where the guy's in the hospital bed and he had survived the fiery explosion that was on that boat. That supposedly Kaiser Sose, they had some rat on the boat there that was going to go ahead and spill the beans about Kaiser Sose and who he was, the Kevin Spacey character. And the guy was bandaged up completely except for, like, one eyeball as he started screaming to the cops, Kaiser Sose! But, wow, I mean, that's the way you get the feeling out there after all that we've been through trying to survive this wet stuff that's out there. It's just been absolutely ugly. All right, going to be a great football weekend once again. They did have Saban, though, bandaged up on the sidelines just like that, didn't they, like the English patient?
Yes, yes.
And yet he was able to coach where all these other coaches are being asked, not even asked, they're being mandated to stay away.
Yes.
Somehow Saban got down there on the sideline and turned a positive COVID-19 test. All of a sudden, it came up negative. Oh, no, there was nothing to that.
Yeah, exactly.
He's over there coughing up blood as he's calling plays. It was, you know, hard to watch, but nonetheless, he managed to find a way, a loophole among the many loopholes that the SEC, this Sankey guy, can he bend over more than he does for Nick Saban? And the Alabama Crimson Tide, unbelievable. They would do anything in their power to have the Clemson Tigers unseated by Nick Saban this year. Is Alabama the second-best team in the country, your opinion, Mike Luby-Lewitz?
Oh, yeah.
Or can we
even
formulate an opinion? You have the Big Ten now, and tomorrow on the show, John U. Bacon, author John U. Bacon, who's become a favorite of ours and is a huge Michigan guy. In fact, he lives in Ann Arbor. Can you believe this? This guy could live anywhere in the world. He's written any number of bestsellers. And he's going to join us on the Deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday tomorrow. But how do you assess who's number one, number two in the country when you have a lot of the powerhouse teams that haven't played yet?
Well, Oregon's supposed to be, even after Justin Herbert, their defense is loaded. They're supposed to be good. The problem is that Pac-12 won't play till God knows when. I guess the middle of November. The Big Ten finally kicks off.
What do they have, a three-game season this year in the Pac-12?
They have like a seven- or eight-game season. The Big Ten kicks off this weekend, which is great, but most programs have already played four or five games, so I don't know how you catch them up to where they're on equal footing with everyone else. But I presume Ohio State will be right there with Alabama and Clemson, and then I think it's everyone else. Like Georgia, I thought was there, but they're force-feeding this walk-on guy, Stillman, Bennett, like, the dude's fine. He's a fine quarterback, but he's not elite. He's not great. Like, Alabama's quarterback, Mac Jones, isn't spectacular, but they're so talented everywhere else that he fits in fine. Like, Georgia's okay offensively, but, like, they don't have three first-round prospects at receiver like Alabama. They don't have Najee Harris, who's one of the top three or four running backs, probably go late first, second round as a running back. Like, so Mac Jones fits in. This kid, Bennett, he's fine. It's a really cool story. He's a former walk-on now starting for Georgia. But, like, you saw they couldn't go toe-to-toe with Alabama. Like, Clemson, Alabama, and then I think Ohio State will be there. And then it's like everyone else.
All right. We'll also open up the phone lines during this hour if you want to give us a call here. And Louis has vowed to look over at the phones because you are working under a very compromised circumstance there. Not only are you a one-man band, operating all of the technical aspects of the show back at the studio there, and we don't even have eye contact, so we've been getting through, and I think we're doing okay with all of this, with the pandemic and everything. Most people tell me the show sounds pretty much the same as always, but nonetheless, very difficult for you, because what's the deal now? If your microphone is open at the studio,
the phone doesn't
where's
ring.
Dave,
the phone doesn't ring.
Where's Dave Wags Wagner on this thing?
Well, no, it's on purpose.
Unbelievable.
Like, I know you care about the callers, but the On Your product is supposed to mean the most. And if the phone's ringing in the background, it's sort of
hokey. Sounds like crap. Sounds like you're in a boiler room. Exactly. Hey, you want to buy some oil and gas leases? And there's a bunch of phones ringing in the background, and you hear the other guys trying to swindle people.
It's one of those commercials. Oh, the phones are off the hook.
Well, and here's the byproduct of that, though. Everything, every move that you make has some kind of residual impact.
Yes.
And unfortunately, people stop calling, right? I mean, it's like calling some government agency to see if you can get relief in any form from this pandemic and how it's crushed you like a grape financially. And people would say they're calling unemployment offices and trying to get a hold of somebody, trying to sign in online a zillion times. And after a while, when do you just throw in a towel? Which is what they want you to do. Hey, Lou, stop it. It's a killing. So that's the unfortunate byproduct. But we will entertain your telephone calls if you'd like to join us the rest of the way at 866-801-0940, 866-801-0940. How much BS was that, though, that thing with Stan Van Gundy where he was claiming he wanted to take his daughters to Disney World? I can't 100%. Believe Pat Riley had anything to do with this. We love Pat Riley. I mean, Pat, you're the greatest of all time. There's no question in terms of coaches, sports executives. I mean, just legendary. I mean, what you did this year with the Miami Heat, absolutely fantastic. But nonetheless, I mean, to try to sell us that Stan Van Gundy wanted to quit his dream job to go to Disney World because he was missing out on the time that he was spending with his family, which is a perfectly good reason. I mean, coaches kind of know they're going to be making this sacrifice, and we've seen where it has been detrimental to relationships later on down the road, and coaches that spend all their time in the office or studying film have great regrets that they weren't closer to their family at a time where it would have been even more meaningful as kids were growing up. I fully grasp that, trust me, on that one. But here he is, like, 20 years later, right, and getting another coaching job.
Yes.
After having a very cushy broadcasting job and making tons of money. It's not like Stan needs to get back into this for the money, so he obviously loves it. Is he still getting paid by the Pistons? He's probably still getting paid as president, coach, GM. I mean, he had three jobs there at all, like $5 million a year, $15 million or something.
Well, he had
total.
A ridiculous contract, which he deserved because we are big fans of Stan Van. He coached
the Magic.
He made
more money off the Pistons than Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas combined.
Exactly.
And it wasn't all that great what was happening while Stan was there, even though we loved the guy. But got to be the biggest bunch of BS we were ever fed at a press conference. That one, the Ronnie Rothstein one, and of course Don Shula, just graciously and gladly capitulating to the idea that Wayne Huizenga wanted to hand the baton to Jimmy Johnson, who he despised. Think about that.
Exactly.
That might have been the biggest bunch of horse manure that we ever tried to, you know, or somebody tried to ram down our throats there at a press conference. Did they expect that the writers were going to walk away from that and just diligently go ahead and perpetrate this hoax?
You know, I don't
say, well, Don Shula had an epiphany the other day. He realized that he was no longer any good for the job there as a coach of the Dolphins. And so he graciously gave way to Jimmy Johnson. At least that's what the Dolphins would like you to believe.
Well, that's the thing is Shula had been very, very, very strongly fighting everyone who said the game had passed him by for like 3 or 4 years.
He hated that.
Jimmy Johnson was nipping at his heels because every time you would hear him talk, he would say, you know, I'm here in South Florida. I would love the opportunity to coach in the NFL again. So Don Shula was very clear about how he felt about wanting to continue to coach and how he felt about Jimmy Johnson. I remember I was younger and I remember hearing that for years.
If you wanted to see Shula just rip off a microphone and throw it at your head if you were asking him a question, all you had to do was bring up the idea that the game had passed him by or mention Joe Namath.
Yes.
Those were the two things that would just set him off. Now, he was dignified enough to at least acknowledge that Joe Namath was great, but you could see that this was like going to be the next to last question you asked. And the other one, the next one, the follow-up would be, will you ever speak to me again? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring up Joe Willie. He always talked about the quick release. And, of course, you know, the comparison was to the great Dan Marino, who's real forte. I mean, if he had anything. Well, one thing Marino had that isn't often acknowledged, well, I guess it is. That's not fair to say. But one thing he had, I mean, this elusivity that he had in the pocket, I mean, he couldn't move. He wasn't going to take off and run. Remember when Marino would bootleg in a touchdown, which was extremely rare? The whole place would go nuts.
Yes.
Even if the entire defense went to the other side of the field, they were completely zamboozled by the fact that Marino still had the football. And then he would kind of, I mean, it took him forever to jog into the end zone. But he would go in untouched, and the place would go bananas. But in the pocket. And now, that's also a common term, in the pocket, much more familiar to football fans, with a guy just standing back in there as you have this cone of protection. And you can step up into the pocket there. And obviously, that was one of the things they liked about Tua's second pass, is that he held his position in the pocket. He didn't panic, and he threw a strike there for what turned out to be a first down. And as you said, a very accurate pass, Mike Lubitz, something you could have looked at. I wanted to see him throw one deep, but that would have been really out of place. It would have been defying all of the unwritten rules of crushing the Jets.
Exactly.
Which is when you're up 24-0 and you send in your stud rookie quarterback for his first action in NFL history, and he's going to embrace every moment of this. You can't chuck one 50 yards down the middle of the field to a wide-open receiver for another touchdown to make it 31-0. That would have been ugly.
Would have been a jerk move,
yes. At that point, Gase would have had every right to go ahead and punch Brian Flores in the token elbow bump that now substitutes and suffices for the handshake. But, yeah, he was elusive in the pocket, and boxing also has the term in the pocket, where you're kind of standing at a distance from the opponent that obviously you can be hit, but you're sort of just keeping yourself out of range, and the same elusivity was exhibited by the great Roberto Duran, who would stand there and make faces, and then he had the ability to just, with the slightest head movement, get out of the way and deflect the damage that could be done by virtually any punch. He was brilliant at that, as was Marino, a characteristic that was also part of what made him so great. 866-801-0940 on the phone lines. The Rays over the Dodgers. Did I sense this yesterday, Luby? I don't know that you were on board with this. I don't want to accuse you of things and being dead wrong when that wasn't the case.
You
write off the Rays already after game one? I think you did, no?
You brought up – no, I felt and still feel
you
the Dodgers.
You have Dodgers in six,
well,
is
when
that
the,
right?
See,
Dodgers
I
six?
Never gave a pick, but I felt – and we talked about it off here, the Dodgers would just have too much, and I still do. We didn't actually do picks for yesterday's game. I actually sort of agreed with Mish where, like, the Rays, especially once you told me that the Gonzalez kid was starting and they were doing that pitching by committee thing.
Yes.
And the Rays had their best pitcher, or at least their second best, in Snell. I'm like, okay, yeah, the Rays are probably going to win tonight. However, I do see the Dodgers probably winning in six. I mean, look, even then, the Dodgers still almost won last night. Like, the Dodgers still came back from 5-0 down and lost 6-4 and had the tying run at the plate being in Bellinger in the eighth. With a runner on second, like even then, the Dodgers still almost stole that game when their pitching was sort of meh.
Tommy Hunt was absolutely right, by the way, yesterday on the show when I brought up Dustin May. I like Dustin May, this string bean of a guy that has the carrot top hair, and he comes into the ball game, and you're thinking, wow, look at this kid, man. That's a real L.A. freak there. He looks like Bill Walton when he was doing Blotter Acid. All the curly red hair sticking out of that hat. That's a dumb look, though, isn't it, Luby, would you say?
Yeah, it looks weird.
It would be like Slash putting a baseball cap yes. on and going out there yes. and backing up Axl there with Guns N' Roses at a reunion. It just would look ugly. But, man, did that guy get shelled in the ballgame. And that was the difference in the ballgame as they managed to touch him up for, I guess he got charged with 3 runs of the 4 he gave up. But they were drilling a ball off the fence. So all of a sudden, some bats that were absolutely dead in the water came to life for the Tampa Bay Rays. And they're even up in the series with the Dodgers. A 6-4 victory last night. We'll get into that. Also, the Eagles and the Giants on tap tonight. I have my guys' night out with Piscataway Ray. I don't know if Jersey nice. Kyle's going to show up. Now that he's in love, he's become completely unreliable on things like this. He used to be great, too. He'd come out there, he'd pick up the check for everybody. I mean, he was a swashbuckling maniac out there in Lauderdale by the Sea. He'll be with us tomorrow, though, and he can explain a few things as he will join us for our Deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday tomorrow from the Breezeway Bar at Gulfstream Park. Brandon Lang going to be on Picking Games, the professor, and also Mark Lawrence. And we are also scheduled to have John U. Bacon, author John U. Bacon, on the return of the Big Ten. So he should be very excited. What do you got, Michigan, Minnesota? Coming up this week?
Saturday night. I guess the Canes again are on Saturday night. I still don't understand who wants to watch the Canes in Virginia nationally. But
I do. I want to see nationally? What this team's all about.
No, find
I'm
out here.
I'm over Manny Diaz now.
But nationally, yes. I don't, whatever. But the big game Saturday night is Michigan at number 18 versus Minnesota at number 21.
There's your secret subliminal hatred of the Hurricanes again coming out, Luby. Questioning why they're even on TV.
In Virginia.
What do you want them to be on? C-SPAN on a Tuesday night?
No, I mean, it should be like a 3 o'clock. Like, there's... The Tennessee-Alabama game to me is a lot more resonates a lot more nationally than Canes versus 1-3 Virginia.
I'm looking forward to that game. I really am.
I think it's big for the Canes. All these games are the games that the Canes would have lost last year that yeah. when they win shows they are growing. These are all important games for the Canes.
All right, Mr. Florida State, and you're not
Wait, Louisville.
Confident
the
that Florida State can beat Louisville?
We win, but I just don't like doing that because I'm super, I hate jinxing, but I mean, Louisville hasn't been impressive at all. I don't know what happened versus Notre Dame. I didn't get to watch that game at all, but I think that was more Notre Dame just struggling than, I mean, whatever. But we are the underdog, yeah. So versus a 1-4 team.
537 votes by Billy Corbin and company, Raconteur.
Rave reviews. I was first,
absolutely
on top
outstanding.
Of you, but all
the
over
best
Twitter,
thing I've
Facebook,
seen.
People are like yeah. raving about it.
Best thing I've seen on HBO in terms of documentaries in a while. I mean, just nice. The Corbin style is there, and you know you love that after watching The U and Cocaine Cowboys and all of the great work that he's done. But this is really something. I mean, just an outstanding job. I don't know where he gets all of the film and all the different archive stuff that he has to use. You know who really stands out in this thing? The interview with Rick Sanchez.
I was going to say, he's been promoting yeah. the Sanchez interview a lot. Whenever he promotes it, he's using that clip a lot.
Rick is brilliant, man. I mean, he really is. You may not have cared for some of his antics there on TV. I happen to be a big fan of Rick Sanchez because he's always at all the
Highly
events.
Friendly when he was
events.
Here. Like, when he was here, we became
guy.
Friendly
yeah.
with the dude.
No, I have always liked Rick. I mean, you know, there was some stuff there. Everybody has something. But nonetheless, brilliant in this movie. He really is. I mean, his analysis is just absolutely fantastic. You cannot believe how Meshuggah Miami was just, I mean, that doesn't seem that long ago, does it? The year 2000? Meshuggah. And if you don't think that every vote counts, 537 votes swung the presidential election that year, and we still don't know if that was even the right count.
Honestly.
One vote can make a difference. All right, back with more in a moment. We'll take your calls, too. Luby, check out the phone lines, 866-801-0940. If you want to weigh on Tua Tagovailoa taking over the reins here. Luby, you're so cold-hearted. Is there a country song that relates to your heart of stone?
I'm sure there's a
you
lot
You won't
of
allow
them.
Ryan Fitzpatrick the chance to just say that he was heartbroken, that he's not the starter anymore?
I can see
Doesn't
him being...
Doesn't he deserve to feel that way? He has every right to feel that
he
way.
He can. I don't understand where it comes from. Like, then you weren't preparing yourself at all. Then you're being delusional and
Come
in denial.
On. Who thinks like that? Were you cut from the bowling team, or did you make that?
Maybe I'm too
team
realistic. Maybe that's my problem. Is I assess a situation as it is, not as I hope and dream it to be.
You're so cold, Libby. You're just absolutely so cold.
He's making a lot of money, and he's gonna not play and just sit there. Like I
we
don't
understand that, but isn't it nice to think that the guy really has his heart in this thing? That's what we loved about.
True. Look, I hated it about him. See, that's also the crux of this is I'm grateful they found a way to still get Tua because we almost friggin' lost him because of Fitzpatrick. They should have been winless last year.
That's true. All right.
So maybe that's
a good reason to hate a guy. Louie, you're unbelievable. I've never heard the such cockamamie logic from a sports fan, no matter how twisted their minds were. Back with more in a moment. Now that.
The time.
It's 9:24.
Can I introduce you?
What was the question?
The world's foremost authority, Professor Irwin Curry.
Right.
Welcome.
Well, I feel not only honored, but I feel the confrontation upon which we have set our sights can no longer endure at the propensity of a developing prognosis. Now, you say, what? It doesn't matter that we... What was the question?
What's your name, sir?
Oh, Professor Irwin Corey, the world's foremost authority.
The Defo Show, featuring Luby. Welcome back to The Defo Show.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
Like a dog without a bone, an actor out on loan. Riders on the storm. Morrison, underrated, in your opinion, underrated?
Remember, people don't mention him a lot, but he's one of the great musicians ever.
Well, tremendous lyricist, there's no doubt. Cancel my subscription to the Resurrection. Send my credentials to the House of Detention. Imagine that, Luby, come up with a line like that, put it into a song. No, I think he's underrated as one of the great vocalists in rock and roll history. Leslie Visser is probably just crashing her car as I say that. Sorry, Leslie. She disagrees with me on that. I think underrated as a vocalist, the great Jim Morrison of the Doors. Like a dog without a bone, an actor out alone. Where would that theme apply today? It's amazing how life is imitating art. Actor out alone. Was that a reference to Ronald Reagan back then?
Wasn't it? I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. All right, welcome back to the show. Luby tells me no activity on the phone lines here, although he's checking, which is good. So you can dial us up. We'll take your calls the rest of the way at 866-801-0940. 866-801-0940. This is a staggering set of statistics, Luby, if you look at it. And I know you know of whom I speak. 5 games into the season.
Yes.
1,368 passing yards. So let's say we're just under a third of the way through the number of games. That equates out right off the top of my head. It's over 4,000 right there, plus another 300-400. Wow, this guy's going to throw for maybe 4,000-plus yards this year. 13 touchdown passes, 69.9% completion percentage, 4 TDs 2 times already in 5 games this season, 4 TD passes, 366 yards in an overtime win over Houston last week. 5 straight games. Well, yeah, 4 straight games they've scored 30-plus. The last 2, 40-plus. Only 2 picks on the season against 13 touchdown passes. Been sacked 5 times. Ryan Tannehill, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Well, the stat that is the thing I used
Ryan
to hammer him on.
Ryan Tannehill. Yes.
That he's you can't get him on was... For yard per completion, he was always amongst the bottom in the league, and I think he has like almost 10 yards per completion. So I think he's like number one in the league in yards per completion, which is a huge stat when it comes to quarterbacks. His third down, which again sucked in Miami, I think is near the league leaders in third down completions. And his fourth quarter, again, he was horrible in fourth quarters here, going back to Texas A&M. And that continued in a Dolphin uniform. And his fourth quarters as well. He's really good in fourth quarters with Tennessee, which is another key stat for quarterbacks.
The punter used to put his cell phone down on second down.
Exactly. It was automatic.
Tannehill wasn't converting any third downs. That's for sure when he's with the Dolphins. Could that have been the problem of the quarterback whisperer? Now, Jason Cole, earlier in the program, you can catch that interview on the podcast there at 940wins.com. 1230thezone.com, and it was excellent today, and he was talking about the fact that Ryan Tannehill, who some people have considered, I think I heard the Greek talking about this yesterday. I was tuned into the Greek. I was driving around back from my mother's house in Century Village, so plenty of time to tune in, and it hit 3 o'clock, and rarely am I driving at that time of day, and I thought, wow, let me punch up the Greek here, see what he has to say, and I believe he touched on the idea that Tannehill was getting MVP consideration.
Well,
now, Jason Cole in his interview said that he's far from even the most important offensive player on his team, which is maybe the kind of role that he needed here, because we were looking for him to be the Dan Marino type, and be the dynamic that really stirred and stimulated the Dolphins' offense. You would like that from your quarterback, but Derrick Henry is such an imposing presence in that running game that Tannehill can't help but shine.
Yes. It's what Tesla and I argued all the time, was if everything's perfect around him, Tannehill can be good. Like, okay, good. If everything's perfect around me, I can win the two games in the NFL. Like, you can't always expect to have everything perfect around you. It's what you see with Dak Prescott in Dallas. Yeah, when he has a great offensive line, a great run game, great receivers, he puts up great points. Okay, but the problem is in the playoffs, good defenses take away your best qualities, and quarterbacks have to win you games. And even Ryan Tannehill, as great as he's been, we saw that with the Tennessee Titans. When they stymied Derrick Henry in the playoffs, he was average. But okay, right now he's putting up numbers and you have to give him credit for it. I give Jason Cole credit for pointing out that fact because the rest of the NFL isn't. Everyone's heaping all the praise on Tannehill and people are talking about him as an MVP candidate. But if you're the second or third best player on your own team, how can you be an MVP candidate for the entire league?
More likely that you would tune in the presidential debate tonight or the Eagles versus the Giants.
That's the thing that sucks. It's a horrible Thursday night game. Like, I don't care about the debate at all, but the NFL game's not any better.
Do you think it'll come up, the Lomachenko fight, when Trump attacks Hunter Biden?
I wouldn't doubt
it. Will
he
also put that on Biden, on Joe? Poor old Joe there. He's standing there just trying to make it through the hour and a half on his feet. And when Trump starts throwing those body blows and then starts going below the belt talking about the kids, do you think that he'll also blame him? And did Lomachenko really have Burisma as one of the pieces of advertising on his shorts? Did Marty the Party Sacks embroider those into those trunks there? There was an air of something that wasn't really right in that Lomachenko fight. Although now they're saying that he just took too long to get started. And actually, there is talk of a rematch, if you can believe that, Luby.
Of course.
What a disgrace.
Lost, and he was the champion who had never really lost.
It never should take a guy that. I mean, you can't possibly, no matter how bad you are at math. And Lomachenko strikes me as being a fairly sharp guy. I think he, is very much, understandable that, when he does his interviews, he seems to have a little bit of depth to him. That's what I'm trying to say.
Smart dude.
I mean, he's not just, some guy, one of these D's, them, and those guys. Yeah, I hit him in the face.
Exactly.
He seems to really understand things. So he had to be able to do the math. If there are 12 rounds and you give away the first six, you then have to win every other round to the end of the fight to even get a draw if the scoring is not being done by Adelaide Byrd or Melvina Latham. And I don't know that they could have gone any other way with that thing. But there is talk of a rematch, and yet it did look like a fix. Will it come up at the presidential debate tonight? Would you take a proposition bet on that? That's got to be pretty healthy, 1,000 to 1, something like that. What if I'm right about this?
That would be your best prediction ever.
I'll be in line behind Ivanka, just cash it. All right, 866-801-0940 on the phone lines. 866-801-0940. Our mini trivia challenge brought to you by personal injury attorney Jared Spingarn is on tap. I'm surprised you didn't know the answer to this one, Luby, and would have not had the appropriate answer. I would have thought everybody knew this. I thought it was too easy. Back with that in a moment. Now that.
The time.
It's 9:38.
What kind of question is that?
What kind of a question is that?
How could you ask me a question like that?
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It's time for today's mini trivia challenge, brought to you by the law offices of Jared Spingarn. Injured in an accident? Call 833-HIRE-JARED. That's 833-447-3527. Or log on to HireJared.com, where it's not just business, it's personal. For today's championship question, we look at the 1981 NFL Draft. We do this after the gaffe of leaving LT off our all-time NFL team at linebacker when asked to select the players at each position who were the best of all time. The Giants took Lawrence Taylor with the second pick in the 1981 draft. Today's HireJared.com mini trivia challenge question is, who was the first overall pick in the draft that year? Was it Freeman McNeil, Hugh Green, George Rogers, or Kenny Easley? That answer in a moment. For Jared Spingard, your injury is not just business, it's personal. After suffering devastating injuries in a near-fatal car crash at 18 and dealing with unjust insurance companies in his own case, Jared decided to dedicate his life's work to help the injured. No law firm is better equipped to handle or understand your case than the law offices of Jared Spingard. If you're a victim of a car crash, pedestrian accident, slip and fall, spinal cord injury, wrongful death, or medical malpractice, log on to HireJared.com. That's HireJared.com. Or call 833-HIRE-JARED. And instead of getting hustled by your attorney, get the one firm that's going to hustle for you. Hire Jared has the resources, the record of success, and over 1,000 winning cases worth of experience. No injury is minor when it's yours. Call 24/7 for a no-obligation free evaluation of your case. You pay nothing unless you win. Don't let your case become just another number. Log on to HireJared.com or call 833-HIRE-JARED and see what a difference personalized service can make. Jared Spingarn has been in your shoes. It changed his life. Let the law offices of Jared Spingarn help change yours. The New York Giants selected Lawrence Taylor with the second overall pick in that 1981 draft. In a way, he fell to the G-men after the New Orleans Saints used the first overall selection to take South Carolina running back George Rogers with the number one pick. That's today's mini trivia challenge brought to you by the law offices of Jared Spingarn. For all personal injury matters, and remember, if you don't win, you don't pay. Log on to HireJared.com or call 833-HIRE-JARED. That's 833-447-3527.
Well, I don't get the rain, the end cold, but they're kept promise.
It's now time for The Defoe Show.
That comes to you each and every day from the Off Lease Only Studios. Defoe's at the Barefoot Beach Villas Verbal Laboratories. Of course, tomorrow he'll be at Gulfstream Park, where you deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday. If you miss anything on the show, we had a lot of fun with Jason Cole, broke down the Tua move for the Miami Dolphins. That's on our podcast, along with the Defoe Files and the Hire Jared Trivia Extraordinaire. That's on our podcast, iHeartRadio.com. Just type in the keyword Defoe, D-E-F-O. You can always hit us up on Twitter all day long, at Defoe Show and at Luby Wins.
Apologies to Mike Essen, who has an internet show on blogtalk.com, for destroying, and his listeners, obviously, for destroying all credibility that he had by leaving Lawrence Taylor. I did, anyway. And he had him as the greatest of all time, Lawrence Taylor. I left him out of my top three linebackers all time because I just blanked on Lawrence Taylor. How could that be?
You forget about him. It's like in the 80s and early 90s, so you think about... Ray, everyone always goes Ray Lewis because we're here in Miami. And then
I had Chuck Bednarik on there. What are you talking about?
Oh, you thought about Bednarik?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I'm about to say it.
The way he smashed Frank Gifford, knocked him right out of football. It was incredible. All of a sudden, he was an announcer. Never was the same after that Bednarik hit. No, I mean, it's impossible to name the greatest of all time. But if you were going to even endeavor to do so, you would have to at least consider among your top three linebackers Lawrence Taylor, would you not?
Well, most people think of LT as the best defensive player ever. And that's usually just understood, like Jerry Rice or Randy Moss.
And we just talked to him. It was a phenomenon. It was our most electrifying interview on Radio Row this past year, which, by the way, Luby, is there going to be a Radio Row? This is an interesting proposition because we love going up there. But would you think that with the protocols now and the way COVID is spiking, that the NFL would be very reluctant to cram thousands of radio stations into one room?
How would you do that?
Like, people circulating all over on top of each
other. It's strangers meeting strangers. It's the antithesis of what we're doing now. Like, even when you go to a restaurant, they're making sure parties stay together. Like, it's literally random people intermingling with random people all day long.
If there's no Radio Row, does it break our string of consecutive years?
Yeah, it sucks.
It does?
It's pretty local. I don't see how or why we would go.
We could drive there. It'd be great. We'd have a car while we're in town.
That was what I thought was going to happen. I was looking forward to it. You know,
Tampa Bay Downs, simulcast. Yes, I was all set to go. I had my days all mapped out.
I just don't see it.
Let's go to George, speaking of callers. George, you're on 940 Winds, 1230 The Zone, and the iHeartRadio app. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Okay, let me ask you a question here. Given they were probably at different times in your life, what do you think was your greatest thrill? Walking into a major league ballpark for the first time and seeing that beautiful green grass, or walking into a racetrack?
Wow. I mean, you're making me have to split my emotions here on a very tough call. I don't remember specifically the first time that I walked into a major league park. It would have been Yankee Stadium. I was a huge baseball fan, as everybody at that time was. It was America's pastime. They had great ball players on the team. You knew the entire lineup. You could have gone ahead out to home plate, and even if Casey Stengel wasn't awake for the game, you could have just put the lineup card in for him. And the first time, being a kid that grew up in Brooklyn, where you were more than happy, you thought broken glass on cement represented a manicured field. When you took that first deep breath after you came out there to the part of the stadium, out of the back catacombs there, and came out to the field itself, just that first breath, I can still smell the grass and the whole thing. I wasn't smoking it then, but it was just absolutely phenomenal. First time at a racetrack was Roosevelt Raceway. Does that count? Does harness racing count? Because that wasn't quite as spectacular, although it was thrilling. But my first time at the flats was Belmont Park, and I was overwhelmed with the majesty and the beauty of Belmont Park. But I would have to say, because I was younger and I was so attached to the game, first time I walked into Yankee Stadium and saw the field, that was like Field of Dreams, like Diana going to heaven. Good question, though.
Yeah, that was me walking into old, well, it was Briggs Stadium then, and we sat in the center field bleachers. And the Yankees,
yeah, 75 cents to get into the game. It was great.
And Yankees had some guy wearing number 7 playing center field, and the Tigers had the gray LK line.
But it's, no, it was just a tremendous feeling. Yeah, everybody loved it that was growing up, especially in New York City. It was such a beautiful escape from the, you know, kind of jungle-like confines that you were operating under as you went from neighborhood to neighborhood playing stickball and punchball. But, no, it was just a great, great thing, and I have an indelible impression about just walking out there and seeing a field, and you dreamt about being out there and maybe wearing a Yankee uniform someday. It was absolutely fantastic. And, yeah, so I'd have to go with that as number one. Belmont Park, first trip there, close-up second.
Yeah, old Hazel Park was the first thoroughbred track that I ever went to.
See, Roosevelt Raceway was in a shopping center. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
We got to run, though, George. Anyway, but Roosevelt Raceway was in a shopping center right around one. Fortunoff's was the big store there. And then my first memory, of course, the first night I went there, we torched my friend's mother's car.
I still love that story.
A true story. I can see the fire. As we're looking out there, and we're actually on our way out to the parking lot, and we're still like on, I think, the second level of Roosevelt. We look out into the parking lot there, and we say, look at that, some clown's car is on fire.
Oh, no.
And it was ours. Brand new Chevy Impala, white with a red interior. It was absolutely a gorgeous car, and his mother was in love with it. And naturally, I got the blame for being the sick degenerate that was responsible for this. I had nothing to do with it except that I brought the kid who was smoking a cigarette in the back there and somehow let an ash come back into the car that smoldered for a while and then set the car ablaze. Total,
about
though.
Right. About right.
Imagine the pain that we had in having to call his mother to see if we could get a ride home. This predated Uber, and we didn't have the money for a taxi. It would have been a long drive. All right, so we'll come back and wrap things up. A deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Brandon Lang, though, buried last week, 0-4, and Mark Lawrence wasn't a whole lot better, so our handicappers laid an egg, except for the professor, who's 2-1 on college football. Try and redeem ourselves tomorrow on a deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday from the Breezeway at Gulfstream Park. Come back and wrap things up in a moment. Now that.
The time.
It's 9:54.